Hello, and welcome to Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne, here at 88.5 KRFY, community radio for North Idaho. I am Dr. Joanne, and I hope you'll enjoy the medical topics I've chosen to present at 8 a.m. the first Monday of every month. The show is also rebroadcast at 8 a.m. on the third Monday, and you can stream this show and every KRFY show at krfy.org. And you can even listen to a podcast of the show at KRFY and just select podcasts. This year, the monthly topics discussed here will feature the medical designations for each month. Since this is December, we are most appropriately discussing toy safety as parents are considering their holiday gifts. We also will give you a few reminders about checking your home frequently for objects and areas where children can be hurt. I have here with me in the studio Dr. Andrew Viscara, pediatrician at Kinnickzoo Community Health, or as I always called it, Sandpoint Pediatrics. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you so much, Joanne.
Lori Foudy, a nurse practitioner at Bonner General Hospital Urgent Care, will also be joining us later to discuss the role of urgent care in the management of foreign bodies, whether it's an ingestion or an aspiration. Now, I also have here with me Susie Perez from our morning show. I call her my executive producer, as she enables KRFY to offer these discussions. Hi, Susie, and thank you for being here.
Good morning, Dr. Joanne. I wanted folks to know that Medical Musing provides the KRFY listeners interesting and informative interviews on a variety of medical and health-related subjects. I also wanted them to know a little bit about who is Dr. Joanne. Dr. Joanne Royans is a longtime KRFY volunteer, previously broadcasting segments of Otto's Eclectic Mix, and now hosting Medical Musing, the first and third Monday of the month at 8 a.m. Dr. Joanne Royans is a retired pediatrician who has lived in Sandpoint since 2010, previously worked as a pediatric practice in Columbus, Ohio for over 30 years, and then covered at Sandpoint Pediatrics. As the media spokesperson for the Ohio chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, she contributed to print, online media, radio, and television. She's the mother of four children, and we feel very fortunate to have Dr. Joanne and Medical Musing as part of our Monday morning programming.
Thank you, Susie. December as Toy Safety Month was first proclaimed by Prevent Blindness America and now has been joined by the American Public Health Association and National Poison Control. The goal of Toy Safety Month is to promote the purchase of safe toys and products and to encourage parents and caregivers to check their home and all places children stay for previously purchased items that have safety concerns, including those items that were handed down from your friends and relatives that could have been recalled years ago. Sadly, even the toy box can cause injuries in infants and toddlers, and so many of these toy-related injuries are preventable. So, Dr. Viscara, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll move on to our conversation.
Absolutely. So I'm proud to now live in practice here in Sandpoint, like you said, in Kinnickzoo. I grew up in western Montana, about 3 hours from here, and did a large portion of my medical training in both Loma Linda, California, near LA, as well as Memphis, Tennessee, practiced for a bit just above Nashville before bringing my family, my wife, who's also a pediatrician, and my two little boys, Diego, who is 4, and Benicio, who is just about to be 2, came up with me, and I'm so tickled to be here and be able to raise my boys here.
They're just the age that get into the trouble that we're going to be talking
about.
That's
exactly right.
Not fun, but how appropriate.
It is.
As pediatricians, our goal is to help children and families stay safe year-round. So how do you alert your parents as to which toys have been recalled or off the market or should be recalled and off the market?
Absolutely. I keep my eye on, of course, like we all do, some news stories that come out on the recall list. I will check the website for the Consumer Product Safety Commission. They do have a lot of recalled toys that they will put on there, and I'll make sure to inform my families, particularly around this time of year when they're looking at purchasing toys.
It's so interesting that the toy themselves sometimes can say not for children of this age, or, you know, it's for this age and older, or non-toxic. All things like that can be actually on the toy box. But so many people feel like if the toy's on the counter or on the shelves of Target or Kohl's or whatever, they're okay to buy. There's so many choking hazards that we kind of think about, but maybe parents don't. And I know when I was raising my children, I don't know that I did. And I'm referring to like stuffed animals with button eyes.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, button vests or whatever, and even like ribbons and things like that. So have you seen any specific injuries like this? Or
I have. I remember my first encounter with those water beads. Have you seen these? This was in Memphis. They are these small little pellets that you can add water to, and they blow up, and they're kind of fun, you know. But you can also find them in plant products, right, that help slowly water your plants. But I remember my first encounter with these was in the ear canal of one child, in the nose, you know. And, of course, our nose connects to our throat. So when I'm looking at trying to take these out, it can be really intimidating. But I absolutely remember water beads when I worked for about a year in a pediatric emergency department in Memphis. So I saw all sorts of things like that.
Wow, that's really interesting, because when I saw them on the recall toy list or the dangerous toys of 2023 and 2024, it was like, that's something that has come in since I was in practice. And again, they were made for plants, but they're also manufactured and labeled for children to have sensory, you know, an experience.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
And the colors, I suppose a parent could, you know, say, I'm teaching my child colors.
Mm-hmm.
And the child decides they might as well, you know, swallow them because they look so pretty.
I want to meet the child who doesn't decide to do that. You know, I just think it would be a natural thing for any kid to do that.
And there were a couple different articles, and one said they can expand 100 times, and
one
said 200 times. So I don't know which is right, but basically expansion is what makes it so dangerous.
Absolutely. A lot of times, I believe in my case with the ear canal, the family hadn't realized that it was in there until it did start to, again, expand, and eventually cause pain. And by that time, it's much harder to get out.
Yeah, those are so much fun because you have to have a good holder. And if you want to do it in your office.
In office,
and I always
right.
wanted to do things in the office because I wanted to be a real doctor.
Same
I didn't
here.
Want to send everyone, you know, out, basically. Then there are the toys that shoot missiles into the air.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and where do they pop and who do they land on and do they land back on the child? And weaponry. I mean, the things that come with sharp points, that's one of the recalled toys. It's like, you know, swords and stuff that had hard points. And
I
now
saw that. The trident. And I thought, folks, this is an old tool used for spearing fish or in war, and I'm not so sure we should be making plastic versions of these for our children to wield against each other. Again, I have two little boys, and the first thing they want to do with any toy is whack each other with it. So it doesn't matter what it is. So I can't imagine giving a trident to a child.
Yeah, and eye injuries too, of course. It's, those are the ones that I kind of remember. I remember a child who had perforated their eye, and they come in and you go, oh my goodness, that looks like gelatin coming out of their eye. I mean, it was really, you know, and then those who sort of tape over their lid and send them out immediately to or you call your ophthalmologist friend and tell them to meet them. You know,
absolutely. I remember growing up, I wasn't allowed, my father happens to be a family practice doctor in Montana, and we weren't allowed to have those rubber band guns because he had a rubber band tunnel inside somebody's eye and kind of, you know, cut it off from behind the eye. That was kind of a wild story.
I have a friend that had that happen. Actually, someone
really?
Was shooting a rubber band, lost her eye.
Yeah.
And she was a young person.
There you go. Absolutely
other
something that
comments
happens.
Or, Susie, you've got some really interesting experiences too.
Well, after we get through all of the potentials, I'm really curious about education. We have a lot of daycares in town. We have a lot of preschools, parents. How, you know, so let's get to that later, but that's kind of where my interest lies.
Well,
how
course.
We get the message out.
And even like plastics. I mean, there are toys that are heavy, heavy molded plastics, and then there are toys that are really thin plastic. And I mean, you can step on them and break, and then they have sharp points. They weren't even, you know, supposed to have the sharp point. Toxic materials are interesting too, as to what's in the toy, and they may be labeled non-toxic, but I don't know. I've got a few that we're going to talk about in a little while. The interesting one I saw was avoiding chemistry sets and hobby kits for children younger than 12. And I thought, that's probably one that's often broken.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely it is. You know. Yeah. But such a smart idea, I think, you know, what a just an intentional and fair recommendation. You know, our kids are going to be curious. That's what they're meant to do. They are meant to play. That's how they learn, is through curiosity and play. And so all they need to do is want to taste a liquid, and boom, you have a chemical.
Yeah. I remember going, when my children were young, I would be making dinner, and I would set whoever it was in a high chair and get out measuring cups. And you put the water in the smallest measuring cup, so it won't, you know, don't put it in the cup because then it's going to go all over. And, I mean, that was just a you know, basically an easy, safe thing for a child to do.
Yeah.
Chemical experiment. I want to just go back to the toxic substances in some of the toys, such as a chemistry set. And it says not children under the age of 12 or a mature, curious, scientific sort of child with parent supervision. And that means that the chemistry set has to be away unless they're doing it together.
Yeah. The key is absolutely with parent supervision. Yeah. And so those toys, they're fine. Again, it's all about being intentional for me. And so if a parent plans on doing this with their child rather than what is typical, which is you want to give a child a toy to keep them entertained, right? And so while you can wash the dishes, that would be one more of, okay, let's learn together.
Let's do it together. It's a nice activity for parent and child. Have you purchased anything that might be a hazard?
Oh, totally. Absolutely. You know, the thing that really comes to mind is it's difficult to buy an age-appropriate toy for your four-year-old when you have a one-and-a-half-year-old in your home.
Oh, that's right.
That is a true difficulty. And so I am all the time purchasing toys that are not age-appropriate for my one-and-a-half-year-old, for my four-year-old, because it's important for him to develop and enjoy his toys. And so, you know, Legos are a big one. Things with small items are a big one. Those are going to go straight into my one-and-a-half-year-old's mouth. And so having to learn how to package those correctly, how to stow them correctly, but still have it available for my oldest to play with is not easy. Yeah. It is not easy. So it does take some thought.
The blocks go from the big blocks to the medium blocks to the, you know, the regular Legos. And they're also a hazard for parents stepping on them. That's right.
And two, many times there are those, you know, dollar items aisles in a lot of your department stores, and they have just the really cheap types of building blocks. And those are tiny. I've purchased those before and completely regretted it. Keep in mind, too, if you're going through a drive-thru and that has a toy in it, that's packaged in plastic, and also you just don't know. You're not sure what age that is for. So just make sure you're checking those items before you hand it to your kid, depending on their age.
Or it might say not appropriate for children younger than 4, but then the child in the back seat is 3 or 2.5, and of course they, you know, want to grab whatever it was that they thought you were
what
buying
prize they got
them.
Yeah, exactly.
It comes down to sensible parenting is not just I'm a parent, but really looking at how to keep your child safe. And that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah, that's
very,
right.
Very, very true. Our family, we have a lot of mechanical people in it. So, yes, I mean, I have to admit that a lot of Lego sets, if it said, you know, age 7 and up, were given to 5-year-olds.
Of course,
you know, the parent did work with them, but we have some pretty clever grandchildren and children, too. And they would do those sets. But again, it's also the storage of it. And where is the 1-year-old or the 2-year-old at the time they're playing with it? Are they in the room? Are they taking a nap?
Yep.
There's certain things that you could regulate. You told us about the water bead in the ear. Any other curious children in foreign bodies experiences you'd like to share?
Oh, you know, so many. A lot of those had to do with jewelry, which I suppose is, if you know, we're in December, it's around Christmas time. So if you're thinking about buying beaded jewelry for your kids, please think twice or at least have a conversation about it. That was most of the time a lot of the foreign bodies that we were getting to. I did have my first button battery experience in Memphis, and I know we'll be touching on that. Yeah. But that's button batteries are a big one, and there's so much nationally now known about them and about how caustic they can be, and efforts to make them safer. But it's a huge topic.
It's such an interesting topic. We'll go into in a minute. I will admit what my own experience. You know, on Western belts and things, there are those beads. Well, when I was about a four-year-old, I put one of those beads in my nose.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents took me to the doctor, and we sat and we sat and we sat. And by the time we got seen, I had sneezed it out.
There you go.
But, you know, I mean, I remember doing it, and I know my daughter mouthed a Christmas ornament. We haven't even brought those up.
Yeah.
You know, like a ball, it looks like an apple. Chomp. You know,
absolutely. That I honestly hadn't processed that until having kids. You know, you want them to experience putting decorations on the tree. That is opening a can of worms. I you know, you have glass ornaments and you have all these tiny little figurines that you're sticking up there. And it truly can be a terrifying experience. And I hadn't anticipated it until, of course, the boxes were open, all the decorations around the table, and we're trying to do it safely. But absolutely.
And your tree looks a little unusual because you have all the breakable ornaments toward the top.
That's right.
And all the felt or, you know, material ornaments toward the bottom, or nothing on those bottom rows when you have a toddler.
That's right.
I think the good news is there's usually an alternative if you think in terms of keeping your child really safe. And in terms of what does it look like to a child, such as a Christmas ornament, a red one, an apple. Those are glass, oftentimes, for later.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's why we put them higher on the tree or whatever. Don't let them put those on the tree. Mm. Not specifically toys, but with the holidays coming and family gatherings, it's also important to check what's on the coffee table. We love to watch infants develop and pull themselves up and walk around the coffee table. But that coffee table can have lots of things that can be aspirated by kids. And then toddlers toddle. They walk around and have multiple tables to choose from. And these aren't toys, but peanuts, nuts, snacks, and unfinished alcoholic drinks are all in range. I have another story about peanuts, and they involved two doctors, in fact, two doctor families. One was a gastroenterology fellow whose child aspirated a peanut, I think, twice. It was very embarrassing.
Oh, no.
for the fellow when he was called to the ER twice. And another was a pulmonary specialist couple. He was an adult pulmonologist, and she was a pediatric pulmonologist. And she came in the room when the child was sitting on the dad's lap and said, "What are you doing giving him peanuts?" And the child went, and also aspirated the peanut. So, you know, peanuts are not, well, they're not toys, but they might look like, or toys may look like peanuts, I guess. The other interesting thing I want to bring up that I actually didn't put in my pre-script was the unfinished alcoholic drinks. I happened to be reading a pediatric journal one Thursday or Friday night, and on Saturday morning I was working, seeing ill calls. And this mother was just freaking about how her child was acting. And I asked that question, "Did you have a party last night?"
Yeah.
And the child had actually, you know, drunk the ends of drinks that are around. So they're all things that to think about. They're not toys, but they are appropriate for the holiday season. We have several great websites that parents and caregivers can look at. And
yes.
I'm working with KRFY, so they'll be posted so you have a reference. But one site I check yearly, primarily when I talk to teachers and parents and at preschools, and Susie, that's an ideal thing to get some of the pediatricians or nurse practitioners to do. I got into this the button batteries because there is an ear, nose, and throat doc who's on the button battery task force who put this presentation together. And I said, well, that's so nice, you know, Chris. Can I take that to preschools around Columbus? And so I did that for a few years before we came out here more regularly. So that's how I got into all this about button batteries. But when I gave the talks, I also found the WATCH website, which appropriately is World Against Toys Causing Harm. And according to that site, there are a few of the most dangerous toys ever made. I don't know, Andrew, if you've heard of these things.
So that's where I had heard about the Trident and some of these small figurines. One of them was like a little pet carrier for little ones where you have the little pet, but then the pet has its own little dog treats that are just minuscule. And you think, are you kidding me? What was the thought behind this to give a small child all these choking hazards? Yeah. But the candidates they have in there for the top 10 worst toys absolutely earn that badge on that list.
Well, even when I was reading one of them, it was like, oh, it became so popular in the last year or two. And it was in other years, too. But the squishy pillow-like...
Oh, the Squishmallows.
Yeah. I mean, it's like... And I bought one for my granddaughter to give at a party. But, of course, it was for a 7-year-old or an 8-year-old. But, again, it's when the younger child, when the infant... You know, don't put it in the infant's bed.
That's right.
Don't, you know, have it be out on your couch because you might go in the kitchen and the infant can be, you know, very attached to the little soft toy.
Absolutely. It's a suffocation risk for kids. And you have, you know, their older siblings are sweet and maybe they want to throw it in the crib as a cuddle item and it's just not a great idea. Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of homemade toys, such as a beautiful little doll that's the grandma made or crocheted and then put buttons on and a little ribbon around the neck. Those can be very dangerous.
Yeah.
But I wanted to get back to the button battery, or maybe you were going to
go there. Yeah, we're going to go a little more into it. But
why is it dangerous?
Yeah, okay, I picked a few of the worst toys, and I'll do this really quickly. But there was a CSI, and CSI is such a popular show, fingerprint analysis kit that contains a powder that contains asbestos.
Just wild. Why would you
even do it? It was recalled in 2009. But
thank goodness.
With eBay and everything, somebody may buy this.
Absolutely. CSI, eBay, Amazon, totally. All of it.
I love CSI. You know, I mean, the parent is going, I love CSI. I can get... And then the javelin darts. That's the one with the sharp points and can pierce the skull.
Absolutely. I mean, those are for sporting events, not for your kids, you know.
And the one article said that even though they changed it to hard rubber, the rubber was so hard they could use it as a mallet.
There you go.
Use it. And again, there are vintage sets. Again, people think, you know, is my mother a hoarder? But no, it's my mother's keeping this so I can give these things to, you know, my grandchildren.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Or maybe they have this notion that they remember a toy from their childhood and they go out and they look for it, but forgetting that they were much older when they used that toy, right?
So, Flubber, does anyone
absolutely remember Flubber?
Flubber, yeah. Made to compete with Silly Putty, but it gave children rashes and sore throats. We talked about the water beads.
Yes,
and
yeah.
The sensory experience for kids over 36 months, but who reads those, you know, disclaimers? And the other interesting one I just wanted to mention was the Gilbert Atomic Energy Lab. Actually came with uranium in it.
You're kidding me.
But it was in the 50s, so hopefully we're all safe, unless, again, you have some grandparent that thinks it was really cool.
Oh, wow. So, I wonder where all those old toys are with uranium in them.
Gilbert Atomic Energy Lab. So I think toy designers are getting smarter.
I would hope so. Though I will say, you can find kind of knockoff brands for all these toys on Amazon. You know, you can see a toy that most kids have, and if you need to be at a smaller budget, you can find similar products online. And generally, they're not as durable. They're not well made. Parts fall off. And so it's really important to think about the before of a toy. How is it made? Is it durable? Is the brand reputable? And two, how is it packaged for my kid? And so when I think about how parents could break down thinking about purchasing a toy, you have the before, again, how is it made? Is it durable? You have the during, you know, does it need batteries? What's my maintenance going to look like? What are what I call secondary uses, meaning how is my kid actually going to play with it, with this toy? And then after, what's the first thing that's going to break on this thing? And then after that happens, how am I going to either replace it or safely dispose of it? And for people who are recycle conscious, you know, how am I going to recycle this toy? Yeah.
Very, very all good things to think about. Again, just briefly, the Watch, the World Against Toys That Cause Harm conference in 2020, there were 18 recalls representing over 8.5 million units.
Incredible.
I mean, it's just fairly amazing. I think you talked about whether it was similar to the Daisy and Donald Duck and the Mickey and Friends set, their heads can detach.
Well, here's a question. If in fact there were, and I believe there were that many recalled, why are manufacturers putting out toys that haven't been pre-vetted for safety, better safety? Maybe they just can't see all the possibilities, but you'd think.
Well, that'd be something to look up. I have no idea. I have more idea of like medicines, how often they're tested in stage one, stage two, stage three trials. Mm-hmm. But I really don't know about
doubt anything toys, is robust, you know. Is really out there for toys, at least not that I have heard of. There may be. It'd be interesting to kind of look up and see if there's any certification that you can look for, any tag, you know, on a toy that can at least put your mind at ease that it's been tested. But as far as I know, I'm not aware of anything like that.
Are there any reference books or websites that you could go to? As a parent, you're going to have a baby. You want to protect that child and get educated on how to be a good parent. I mean, we used to have Joanne, you and I had Dr. Spock, right?
Dr. Spock. Well, I always like, there's two books that I refer to, and Andrew can add on to that. The Academy of Pediatrics has a book, too, for your child from 1 to 6, or 0 to 6, I think. And that's a really good book. Barton Schmidt was an author that I just loved. And he had, you know, so we will give when a parent comes with a newborn or we have a prenatal conference or whatever, kind of recommend some books. So there are a good number of books. You can add what you're using nowadays.
I always recommend healthychildren.org. Yeah. It's through the American Academy of Pediatrics, and it has incredible information for parents there. It can be fairly detailed as well, which is always good. Mm-hmm. So that's the website I generally refer families to.
Let's talk a little bit about unwitnessed ingestions and what symptoms, you know, come to mind when a parent brings a patient in and they don't know what's wrong and the child has this symptom or that symptom.
Absolutely. One of the first things that I always think about is pooling of saliva. If your child has something that they've ingested that's stuck, let's say, in their esophagus, not only are they going to have difficulty swallowing, they're going to be refusing liquids to begin with. Not only that, they're going to be entirely unable to handle their own saliva and their own secretion. So if you have a child who's maybe you saw them kind of cough or choke a little bit early and you thought maybe nothing of it, but now they're kind of leaning forward, they're pooling their spit or it's just drooling all over the place, maybe they're saying, ow. That absolutely, for me, points to an ingestion.
And the runny nose from one side, mm-hmm. the unilateral runny nose, that's where I put the bead, was in the one side.
Yep.
Or the ear pain. I mean, every parent is so attuned to an ear infection. And, you know, they end up with foreign bodies.
There's also, for foreign bodies that have been there for a while, or for a minute, as they say in Memphis, terrible breath, really, really bad breath. If your child suddenly has horrifyingly bad breath and you cannot figure, you're brushing their teeth, you're doing the mouthwash, you're doing all those things and the breath is terrible, look in their nose and there's probably something lodged in there that's been there for a week or two. Oh,
so if a parent had a child and they were experiencing that saliva and they were acting like they were in pain, what would a parent do?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if you can give advice, but it'd be great for parents to know that ahead of time.
I always say call your pediatrician first, you know, call one of us first and we'll give you some advice. In general, I do not recommend families drink or give or supply their child anything to then ingest again. But that, you know, for me, that kid needs to be seen by somebody who knows what to do about it.
Mm-hmm. And again, you go by how the how serious the distress sounds. If you want to send immediately to the ER, you know, there's squad, there's going, driving yourself to the ER or to urgent care or to your pediatrician's office.
Sure.
Pediatricians, if we feel the severity is such that we can see them, we would prefer you come to us rather than urgent care even. But that's mm-hmm. just, it depends on the time of day, I suppose, too.
Yeah.
Let's focus, because Susie brought it up too, on the child who may have swallowed a button battery. There are, you can kind of globally say all button batteries are button batteries, but there's the smaller ones that are like in hearing aids, scales, calculators, mm-hmm. Certain areas. And then there are the corn-shaped ones that look like a quarter when you take an x-ray. It's so interesting how you can tell the difference though between a button battery and a quarter on x-ray. And then there are also magnets. If someone swallows two magnets and your intestine, think how long your intestines are. I mean, it can, you know.
What happens?
So if you have two magnets and they attract each other, one's farther down in the bowel than the other, and they'll just clamp together. And sometimes that means that they're going to erode the wall, and suddenly you have a perforation in your bowel because they've eroded the wall and pinched off the tissue.
What does the medical team, the emergency team, do if a button battery goes down and it's not retrievable from the mouth?
Mm-hmm.
You just let it go? I mean, it's partly the problem is it's toxic.
So one of the first things we do when we think about a foreign body is we're going to get a chest x-ray, hoping that thing that we're x-raying is radiopaque, meaning I can see it on an x-ray. Because keep in mind, some foreign bodies, you can't see on an x-ray. So if, as you said, if this is a button battery, you look for that little ring, surround kind of just on the inner edge, and that's going to tell you it's a button battery. From then, if you are in a medical center, a children's hospital, you are getting kind of all hands on deck and you're getting your endoscopists on board to see what they would like to do first. And really they do want to go in there and do a rapid anesthesia. And oftentimes they'll be right there in the emergency department in one of their large bays and try to go down with a camera scope and retrieve it. Because a lot of times it's already done a lot of damage. It's already caused some breakdown of the tissue that is then going to scar, et cetera. One of the things from the ENT conference that you had sent me that I thought was interesting is they try to actually put a little bit of really mild acid wash there, because what that battery is producing is actually creating a caustic base product. And so they need to neutralize that as well.
And if the button battery, if the negative side faces forward, you're going to burn your trachea, your breathing tube.
Mm-hmm.
If the button battery faces backwards, you can actually cause damage in the spine, which I hadn't again thought of too.
Yeah, or the aorta, depending. Yeah.
So, and then TE fistula means a hole between your trachea and your esophagus.
So there are ways to save the child,
to
speak. But the mm-hmm. best way is prevention.
Always. Yeah. That's pretty much 100% of what I do is prevention. That's pediatrics for you. That's what I love about it.
When you were in practice or when you were in Memphis or here, have you had experience with, oh my goodness, I better send this child right away to the ER?
Absolutely. Luckily, so far, it's been about 5 months now that I've practiced in Sandpoint. Yeah, knock on wood, absolutely. There's not been too many, at least foreign body experiences where I've said, okay, this child needs to go immediately to the ER. But we can talk about when I would hear over the phone those instances. That's if a child is making any kind of noises as they're trying to breathe. If they're breathing in and they're making a really high-pitched noise, that is a sign that foreign object is in their airway and they're having a hard time of it. Again, the drooling sign, that's enough for me, I would think, to go ahead and send to the ER, depending, and or just urgently see them first. Just put them in my office. I'll see them first thing, interrupt me, and I'll say hi and see what's up.
It's interesting because this wasn't in Dr. Jay Tana's talk that was forming the basis of Ian Jacobs' video that I sent to you, but talking about definitely calling 911, media, calling your pediatrician, calling 911. But at home, if your child's over a year, they actually recommend giving 2 teaspoons of honey every 10 minutes, up to 6 doses, because that could coat the battery and prevent the hydrolysis. Hydrolysis means breakdown of saliva and water, basically, that causes the change in pH that causes the burns.
Mm-hmm. So that was really fascinating to me, too. You know, honey is a light acid. It's a really mild acid. Like a lot of things you don't think about are acids. Honey is one of them. And so absolutely, it not only coats it, but also lines it with a mild acid to neutralize the chemical reaction that's happening. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, but I heard when my child was born, way back when, that you don't give a child under one honey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's what I was saying.
Okay.
That over one.
Okay.
Yeah, over one, it's honey. And under one, except no parent is going to have this unless they had some other problem with their
Carafate,
GI tract.
Right.
Carafate or sucrophate, which is a thickening agent. But most homes won't have this product. But it could be that if a pediatric office would have it, then you could give that and send them on.
And the reason for no honey before the age of one is it has botulism.
Yeah.
It's a risk for botulism.
Or the student. The child doesn't have the digestive enzymes to kind of oversee that.
That's right.
The thing is, if a parent, you know, if a child's 11 months and they have regular, you know, honey that's from the grocery store and it's not a natural honey,
pasteurized,
it's probably not going to have botulism in it.
Yeah, exactly.
But we can't, you know, recommend that specifically.
Clearly.
But, you know, there's a little common sense to that. Mm-hmm. And then afterward, they actually give acetic acid, 0.25% acetic acid, to sort of, again, work on your inside, working on the GI tract.
Which is also known as vinegar.
That's right.
All right.
I'm still curious. I don't know where you want to go with this right now, but you probably have more to say, but I still want a little time for outreach and education.
Absolutely.
Both to parents and websites that you mentioned one, but, you know, locally.
Yeah.
Stuff's going on. But what you had other questions, maybe?
Well, no, I think we've really, you know, gone over most of them, like unwitnessed. The symptoms we've talked about, basically. And the key words or symptoms would be, again, my child's drooling, my child is, you know, coughing kind of strangely, just like a short, harsh cough, or the runny nose from one side, or, gee, there's goo coming out of his ear, and we haven't been swimming, or, you know, he didn't have any acute pain episode, or he hadn't had a cold recently. So, and again, referring directly to the ER, and do they have a team here? I guess I'm going to ask that of Lori, too, but if you send someone
that does an emergent endoscopy, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I think
we'll
it's a
have
fair
to
question.
Work on that. Yeah. I don't know how many. I mean, what on call for the ER, what kind of doctors? So that'll be a good question when I talk with Lori next.
You know, and you mentioned prevention. I think hopefully companies are doing a better job. I know anytime I buy a button battery, they are tough to get out of the packaging. They're really hard to get out of the packaging, and that's a good thing. There are ones now that have blue dye on them and have kind of a terrible tasting coating to them. And so you're hoping that the kid will spit it out and then to leave evidence behind that was a battery that was in their mouth if you get the blue dye,
really,
which is a pretty cool idea. But that's, you again, talking about online sources, you don't have to, you can buy inferior products that don't have that. So,
And toys that have batteries now, you always have to use a screwdriver, which is sort of annoying if you want to get a toy ready pretty quickly, and then you go, no, it's really smart.
Yeah,
so
it is very
intelligent. I need to get my Phillips.
Yep, that's right. And then, too, just remembering, too, that that little screw is also possibly a choking
tightener.
Tighten it well. When it comes to doing education for the community, so much of that takes place in my office, you know, in the offices at Kinexu, where we are, we call it anticipatory guidance, and we are discussing with families the most pertinent things for their kids. So come that toy buying season, you know, those are topics that we were reviewing at every well visit. And so that's what I love about my job is a huge portion of it is educational for parents and for kids.
That's why I love being a pediatrician too. And that's what you miss kind of is, right, is helping people and educating them.
Mm-hmm.
We could go, you know, we all could form a team and go to preschools around
town.
Wouldn't
that be fun? I would love that.
Well, all preschool providers must have first aid, CPR, but this is very specific to be alerted to the kind of toys, the kind of objects that could cause even more damage than just an accident.
So
that could be a component of a preschool's certification to have what you offer is the educational component about safety
True.
And toys.
And I am not aware what kind of hoops there are to jump through to become certified to, mm-hmm. to run one of those places. I imagine that that's part of it, but I certainly don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, well, thank you, Dr. Vizcarra. We really appreciate your sharing your knowledge and experience with our listeners. Anything, comments you might still add? Or
I would only add two things. Try to pair your gifts. If you're buying a gift that's going to make your child more mobile, i.e. rollerblades, a bike, or if you're getting them skis for the wintertime or a sled, please pair it with a helmet and one that you know that they will love and therefore wear. Those two things come as a set always. And the other thing that I would have you pair as a gift, just to put a lot of intention and thought behind, are electronics, specifically things with screens. We have to really think about our screen time. It's probably the number one thing I talk about in my office is screen time. So if you're making the decision for your child to buy a gaming system or a cell phone or a tablet, what have you, please pair that gift with time coupons. Give them 60 minutes for free and then they have to earn the other coupons, right? Please pair those gifts together and make a plan for your kid's screen time.
Yeah, what a great idea. And again, we want to be sure that we get to, not all people come to the pediatrician's office, some people go to family practice, but
yeah.
Just educating in general, if we could do that, if we could spread it out, have an outreach system for something like that.
And
absolutely.
If parents knew that too much screen time actually slows down the neural pathways from connecting.
Yeah, yeah, I could fill a whole hour of your time with screen time stuff.
Yeah, we could talk
about
that.
Me too.
All right, well, thank you again, and we enjoyed speaking with you, and there's lots of really good information.
That was absolutely my pleasure, thanks.
Thank you, Dr. Vizcarra.
Next up on Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne, here at 88.5 KRFY, is Lori Foudy, nurse practitioner at Bonner General Hospital Urgent Care. I'd love to hear your experience and get your insight regarding children and foreign bodies, whether they be toys, batteries, magnets, or household items. First, Lori, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I was a nurse for about 20 years, and I worked in the emergency room, surgical intensive care, did clinical research and teaching, and I went back and got my nurse practitioner, and then worked in a local community hospital in the ER for about 16 years, and now I've been working in urgent care for about 5 or 6 years.
Wow, so you have a lot of emergent experience.
Yes.
And with children who have very different medical problems. How many foreign body ingestions actually get to an urgent carer? How does your system work?
Well, if it depends on what kind of emergent body, whether foreign body, whether they should go to the ER to the emergent care. If it's something like a button battery or a lithium battery, those need to immediately go to the emergency room because time is really critical. They probably, here in Sandpoint, if it's a button battery or a lithium battery, if they've swallowed it and it's in their esophagus, they're going to need to be transferred out to Spokane or Kootenai Hospital. So time is critical.
So that is the urgent care protocol. I mean, do the nurses get a call? Do the parents walk in with the child? How do you, find out about the child at the beginning?
Well, frequently they'll just walk in, they'll tell us what's going on, and then we immediately send them over to the ER so that then the ER can start calling and seeing where they need to transfer the child, whether they need to go to Kootenai or Sacred Heart.
So the ER docs here never get an ENT or a GI person to come in here. They just don't feel as equipped, I guess.
Not for pediatrics. No. For adults, yeah, but pediatrics have to be shipped out, unfortunately.
I see. What about witnessed and unwitnessed? There's so many times that a parent brings a child in with pretty nonspecific symptoms. I can think of one, and it's not a toy, but it was a sort of an interesting story. It was an 8 or 9 month old, and they were wheezing for the first time. And so, but they were fairly bad. severe. We'd given them several epinephrine treatments and breathing treatments in our office. They ended up at our children's hospital admitted. And then they went home after a few days. They came back again. And it maybe took the second or the third time for that chest x-ray to show up that there was something blocking. And they actually had a penis aspirated. Mm-hmm. So we're mainly talking about toys and batteries and things like that. But even peanuts, and especially then you start asking people, what's on your coffee table? Because we like children to get up and walk around things, but you know they can aspirate most anything. So what my point is, I guess, is that was sort of unwitnessed, although the mom said, oh, yeah, I did hear her choke or something, but they didn't really think about it for days. So do you get stories like that sometimes with children with nonspecific symptoms?
We definitely get nonspecific. And so the typical thing, they'll bring the child in, you examine the child, you get a chest x-ray, because I had one instance where mom thought child maybe had swallowed something down, and then there was a coin in the esophagus. So, yeah, you definitely, you never know with kids. And then they have to be, you know, if you can't see anything, then you have to closely monitor them and possibly end up doing a bronchoscopy.
And even with button batteries and coins, I mean, the little tiny button batteries that are in hearing aids still have a lot of risk, but they pass much easier. It's those lithium ones that look like a quarter, the size of a quarter, that cause the most damage. I always tell a story, too, about my son. He may not like this if he listens to this, but he went to, concession stand when we were at a play, and I said, Kevin, where's my change? And he said, I swallowed it. It was a dime. So it didn't cause any problems, but, I was sort of like, oh, my goodness. My radiologist friend would also say if you wanted your child x-rayed for a coin, that we'd then tell them to check their stools over the next week or so. And most parents kind of stop. A lot of parents aren't quite as vigilant if it's a dime or a penny, but they're very vigilant if it would be a ring or something that was very important to them. So again, the usual presentation, when you see a child that you may be sending to the ER, what symptoms are they displaying to you?
Well, the one I had with the that's why the coin child was kind of having some intermittent coughing, just kind of spontaneous coughing. Wasn't in any serious respiratory distress when I saw the child, but then when we saw that there was a coin in their esophagus, then you're going to watch it. You can also see, we've also seen coins in the trachea, which obviously that's a much bigger deal. And then they would be shipped out so they could have a bronchoscopy to get that coin removed.
Do you ever have to do a Heimlich yourself?
Yeah, we have. Or one of the other things that kids will frequently do is stick something up their nose. And so one of the things that parents can do at home, it's called the mother's kiss. So if they stuck something up their nose that can easily be expelled, you have them occlude the other nares and then forcefully blow in their mouth. And a lot of times the object will pop out without any problems.
Interesting. What about pulling foreign bodies out of ears?
Yes, we've done that. That's actually pretty frequent. Kids, I don't know why they like to stuff things in their ears. We've got little alligator clips that will, if they're flat enough, that we can pull them out with. Otherwise, sometimes we irrigate them out. Just depends on what the object is that they've stuck in their ears.
So those are things that the ER, or well, you had an ER background too. Did you see more before you started working in the urgent care here?
I've seen, a little everywhere, because I'm actually amazed at how many people that come to the urgent care like they're having a heart attack, and they'll actually come to the urgent care. So people don't really know where to go.
Well, they want to see a doctor or a medical personnel ASAP, I guess, as quickly as possible. And so that's why they see your sign or any sign of an urgent care center. What have you learned about special instructions for button batteries or magnets? So, and what do you then teach the nurses in the urgent care or talk to them about?
Well, first off is teaching the families to try to not leave those objects around so that the parent, there's not that risk, because unfortunately the lithium batteries and button batteries are in so many things, just even like the musical cards you get, the flashing shoes, a lot of games, your key fobs, all that kind of stuff have the batteries. And if, you know, tell the parents that if they do ingest a battery, they need to be immediately going to the emergency because we need to start. It's with hours. In a couple of hours, they can have damage to the esophagus.
Yeah. So it is supposed to be within 2 hours that they get seen, where, again, if you have to be sent to Spokane, that's almost your whole 2 hours. We discussed in our previous conversation with Dr. Viscara that there is now a recommendation for children over a year to get the 2 teaspoons of honey every 10 minutes up to 6 doses. Is that?
Yeah. The only thing is I wouldn't screw around trying to find the honey. I would immediately, you know, if the honey is easily accessible, great. Give it to them and then rush them to the ER.
Yeah. Do ERs have sucrophate or caraphate right available? Or again, would there be a delay with getting it from a pharmacy?
They actually have the honey, but when I talked to them over in the ER, their idea was, we don't really care about the honey so much. The whole idea is get them out. Yeah, get them out of here.
Okay. Well, it's interesting when you said that about greeting cards. It's because I always thought those musical cards were so wonderful. And I have 7 grandchildren, and I would send them. And then when my 6th and 7th grandchildren were born, I had started doing this button battery talk for the ear, nose, and throat doctors at Nationwide Children's in Columbus. And I stopped sending the musical cards. But, of course, the other grandparents didn't know that. So the grandchildren really loved the cards they got from, you know, from their dad's parents. And I would always send these very plain, ordinary things. But, you know, I had a medical reason for it. But anyway, it was like, oh, that's such a cute card you got from Gigi, who is, you know, the father's mother. But anyway, is there anything else we really should know now about button batteries and toys and anything else in your experience that you'd like to share with us?
Well, the other ones that are dangerous are the really strong magnets, because if the child swallows 2 magnets or a magnet, something else, metal, that can, the two will can get adhesed in the intestines and the esophagus and cause problems. So those are another big deal.
Yeah, that would, you know, to think that how long your small intestine is and to have one battery about 2 or 3 inches apart and have it be, that would actually be really scary to me, because you can't go down there. They'd almost have to
do surgery. Yeah, unfortunately.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Lori, for participating today. I enjoyed your insight on the urgent emergent management of children with foreign bodies most anywhere. In summary, before anyone buys toys for children, they need to consider, is it safe or is it appropriate for a child of their age? Just because a toy can be purchased at a store or online, it may not be safe for the child. Please check for recalls. We discussed previously the watch site World Against Toys causing harm in children, safetoys.org, or the Consumer Product Safety Commission website. Then inspect the toy yourself. Be sure toys already in your home, especially those that have been passed down from friends and relatives, don't have loose pieces and aren't ones that have been recalled maybe even 10 or 20 years ago. To help you get more information, there are great websites available on KRFY's Facebook page for reference. Check out healthychildren.org from the American Academy of Pediatrics. Again, I mentioned toysafety.org, the watch site, which cleverly stands for World Against Toys Causing Harm, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, and PreventBlindness.org. And thank you all for listening to Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne. Please do remember, this is a medical information show. It does not substitute for discussing your concerns with your medical provider. Please tune in next month on January 6th as we head into 2025. This is 88.5 KRFY, Community Radio for North Idaho. And I do want to thank Lori again for coming and sharing her insight with us. Thank you all.